we've been speaking with Richard Silverstein, and he blogs at Tikkun Olam and writes for various wonderful publications like the Middle East Eye, New Arab, Jacobin Magazine. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dennis. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. And guess what? You've been listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we spent another hour hopefully bringing you the kind of material that means something to you. And we're not afraid to tell the truth about that war 20 years ago that the United States wanted, just like they wanted this war with Russia. Oh, yeah, they did. They did. We're out of here.
And that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, March 25th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. for our 2023 Bluegrass Marathon, live at Multnomah Grange 71. Uncle Chippy and Josh will kick off the marathon at 9 with a journey back to 1971, along with live recordings from local and regional acts. At noon, we'll head down to the Grange for live performances from several of Portland's finest bluegrass bands. Performers include Josh Cole Band, Sawtooth, Sunny South, and more. The event is also open to the public, so bluegrass fans are invited to join us down at the Grange. More information can be found at kboo.fm/bluegrass23. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Everybody, welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, the monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. My name is Erica Thomas, and I'll be hosting today along with Sebastian. And then let's go around and meet everybody, and then we'll meet our guest. So, interviewers, do you want to say your names?
Sebastian, any pronouns? Student at McDaniel High School, again. So cool.
Welcome back.
My name's Noah Brown. I am a PSU student, and I use she, they pronouns.
And my name is Emily Veenstra. I am a Portland State student as well, and I use they, she pronouns.
Great. Welcome, interviewers, and welcome to our guest, Samantha Wall.
Thank you.
We're so glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. So we always like to kick the show off by offering the artist an opportunity to, just in your own words, say a little bit more about who you are and what you do to the students.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Samantha Wall. I am a visual artist here in Portland. I've lived here for nearly 22 years now, and have made work almost that entire time. I primarily make drawings, works on paper, printmaking. Most of it is figurative. Quite a bit of it is just black and white. I don't know, I guess it's kind of multimedia, you know, mixed media. but who knows? Like, I think I'm just committed to drawing.
I did read a lot, and I forget some of it, but I would like to hear a little bit about, like, your exhibits.
Sure.
So could you tell me something about that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I just had an exhibition last summer called Beyond Bloodlines, and that exhibition, I don't know, it felt, there's something kind of powerful about that one compared, well, I mean, I guess part of it could have been the pandemic as well, coming out of it and feeling like I, you know, finally like reconnecting to my community. I had an exhibition during the pandemic, and that, you know, it felt difficult, more difficult than it should have. So yeah, the one last summer felt really vibrant, and I was really excited about that work. It was a way of, I was introducing ways of working, techniques, and materials that were a little bit outside of what I was comfortable with, and so that was exciting. You know, like taking risks in the studio is always something that, especially when you've been working for quite a while, I think it can be kind of difficult. But I found myself, you know, taking chances and exploring materials, like familiar materials, in new ways, and that was exciting.
Could you tell me a little bit about those materials?
Sure. Well, I've worked with ink in the past, you know, ink on like cotton rag paper, and so like I know what those materials like feel like and how they'll behave together. But I was working, so the material I used in the last exhibition is called Duralar, and it's very similar to Yupo. It's a synthetic paper. So essentially it's plastic. You know, ink sort of sits on the surface rather than sinks into the paper, and it will do kind of unusual things. Like in the past, I've worked wet on wet on that material, and so it creates a lot of like reticulation and sort of fracturing of the ink as the sort of materials and binder separate. But in the last exhibition, I was using like a sprayer, and so I was creating stencils, which was new for me. I've been cutting out shapes and bodies from Duralar for a couple years, and using it in different ways, sometimes just applying like the cutouts directly to the wall, which is kind of fun. But I would have these like remnants, you know, I would have sort of the like artifacts, what was left over, and I couldn't really figure out what to do with it. And last, or two, maybe was it last year or 2 years ago, I worked on a public art project and became introduced to this sort of sprayer called, it's called Prevel, and it basically like atomizes any liquid. You know, it can turn kind of anything into spray paint, essentially. And so I was doing that with ink and getting this really beautiful surface that was similar to this other technique that I used. So I was really attracted to it. You know, it kind of created this granular surface that I found really beautiful. And I could really build up the blacks, you know, and like get like these really, this like rich texture and color that I couldn't really create in any other way. And so I was using, you know, the stencils, like, you know, like I had these cutouts, and then I was using like what was left and like creating something else with it. And it allowed me to kind of combine, you know, shapes and bodies, and then like go into the material to draw, and like leaving out sort of like white areas that I could go then back into to draw, you know. So I was kind of changing up everything about how I was drawing and building images, and that was, which is a lot of fun.
You mentioned you were changing a lot of things. At any point in time, did you maybe change an art style or something like that?
Well, I don't know if I did. I mean, they still feel very much like my work, you know. I think that has been kind of fascinating to me, that no matter how I'm making images, like building these drawings, they all still feel like my drawings. And so it's... I don't know. I guess it's interesting to try to figure out how to identify like what that quality is, you know, that makes it feel like it's mine, that it's my hand that's producing it. I mean, maybe just the fact that it's me making it, that is what, you know, I'd like, but there's no real way to like pinpoint what it is. But yeah, the style, I guess techniques, there's definitely techniques that have changed, but stylistically, I think it's still very much mine.
Sebastian, do you mind if I jump in with a sort of follow-up on the question of style? A lot of times the high schoolers would like to know how artists originally developed their styles and what the trajectory looked like from, I think all of us as artists start out early on wanting to cultivate something like that but not knowing where to start.
Well, let's see. My style... I don't know if I had one to begin. I don't think I had a style to begin with. I think I, you know, just sort of, I guess, copied other artists, you know, until I figured out what made sense to me. I think probably most artists do that. You know, we just copy what we like until we, until something lands, until something makes sense to us. You know, it feels right. And you really, like, you only know that. It's so sensory. Like, you it's something you have to experience, you know. It's something that you feel when it, like, clicks into place. And it might even be just, like, a hint of it. It might not even be, like, fully clear, like, as you're making work. You know, I think it's something that definitely develops over time. But then at a certain point... it seems like there's, at least for me, there I kind of created some kind of consistency. You know, I don't think I wasn't aiming at developing a style. I was just interested in developing my drawing practice. You know, like, I wanted to be good. I don't, you know, at that point, I don't even think I understood what that meant. But, you know, I guess I wanted to make something that I was proud of, you know, that I thought was beautiful, maybe somehow captured some quality about a person or thing that was, you know, maybe perceptible to me, you know, something that I, like, translated or enhanced in some way through drawing. And so I think that was what I was aiming for. But like I said, I didn't know that early on. I was just, you know, looking at other artists I liked and then trying to recreate some of that.
Could you tell us how you kind of built up those skills, especially your figure drawing?
Yeah, I feel like I attacked the parts of the body that I didn't understand, and I drew them, like, endlessly, you know? I remember being uncomfortable drawing hands, you know, fingers, ears in particular, the hardest part, right? And just endless sketches of hands and ears. I don't know if there's any other way to do it. Until I felt like I had some kind of understanding and control, you know. But at the same time, there's a part of me that likes to forget how to draw those things. I think returning to it, because, you know, there's some kind of foundational knowledge that is sort of created and it's not forgotten. It's, you know, it's sort of, I think it's sort of stable, at least in me. And like the ink drawings on cotton paper, I don't make them consistently. Like, I sort of step away from them and kind of work on other projects for a while. And then there's something that, I don't know, calls me back to them. And for maybe the first, like, couple weeks, it's as if I forgot how to draw altogether. There's almost, like, panic, you know? I'm like, oh, no, I don't remember how the figure looks or what's an arm supposed to look like. And so having to, it's not quite figuring it out. It's, like, finding it again, you know? And there's something really enjoyable about that process. And so I find myself doing that pretty regularly.
Nice. Do you typically use, like, references?
I do, yeah. I often take my own photographs. I use myself as a model pretty regularly, but I also enjoy working with other people. There's something about getting to know another person's face, like when I'm making portraits, you know, and that sort of familiarity that grows when you're drawing someone over and over again. You know, it's really, there's something really intimate about that. And I haven't been able to do that for a while, but I'm looking forward to, like, getting back into that part of my practice soon.
How How do you research new work when you're beginning a new body of work? What does your research process look like? Hmm. And what tools or what sort of like habits do you have inside of that?
Yeah. It looks different for each project. Maybe the start of all projects is it's formed emotionally. Either, you know, it's a reaction to something that's happening, you know, in the world, that's, you know, something that's really something I can't sort of process without, you know, working through my emotions through drawing. So I think there's always sort of an emotional component. It all begins with that. And there's some things I think that are just a continuation of, you know, these sort of lingering inquiries into identity, into race, you know, just there, you know, I think that I'll probably never stop making work about that. But there are also some things like my last body of work, I think that kind of blossomed out of this, you know, need to vent a little bit. And I don't know, being like making work out of rage is, it's interesting what that looks like for different people. And for me, it's not, you know, it's not this like explosive, like really expressive gesture. You know, it's maybe the first drawing might look like that, and then I won't continue that piece. Like, I know that it was more of like kind of a reflex to something, and that there's something else there that I need to dig into. And I guess that happens quite often, you know, in artist practice. Like, there's work that we may not exhibit, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's unsuccessful. It's just not quite, it hasn't quite cooked enough, maybe, you know? So that, I can remember that happening with my last body of work, that there were a few pieces that felt very outside of how I normally produce work, and knowing that there's like other things there that I need to dig into. And, you know, and that's when I'll look for authors, you know, look for books that are related to like what I'm interested in, and look through those bibliographies and look at who they're, you know, referencing. Have conversations, you know, with friends and colleagues. Research usually starts, there's a strong emotional component, and then I build from there.
Cool.
I would love to hear more about your process in general. Like, I guess, how does a piece go from kind of an idea into the finished piece?
Yeah. Yeah, I build my sketches usually through Photoshop, because I'm working, you know, from images that I take. I have a pretty large archive of images, and especially during the pandemic, I was pulling from a lot of images I'd taken like over a decade ago, which is really fascinating because I have never really done that before, and so. I recognized I was approaching the sort of that part of it, you know, the sort of building and sketching. It was different from how I usually make drawings. Like, in the past, if I was making a portrait, I really enjoy like the conversation that happens during the photo session, you know, like there's a kind of connection that's made. And like when you're having, you know, an in-depth conversation with somebody, there's a sort of residue that they leave, you know, this impression that they leave of themselves. And I like, or I have to sort of mind that. I have to, like, as I'm building the portrait, you know, I try to find a way to sort of incorporate that sense of who they are into the work, and not just create something that feels like a likeness, you know? So, but in the last body of work, things were different because it had so much time had passed. That sense of who these individuals are had kind of faded, you know? And so I was approaching that part a little different, and building, you know, the sketches through Photoshop. And then when it came time to make the piece, I don't make smaller sketches. Like, I kind of dive into full-size drawings, and if they don't work, I just do them again. So it's a little, I don't know, I guess that part might be somewhat strange not to have preliminary drawings, but I think I've learned the hard way. I can't tell you how many times I've made drawings that I love on terrible paper, or made them not quite at the scale that I would want them to, and so I just commit, you know, to the scale that I know I want them at, and the paper, you know, that like works best, you know, for the material.
How long does like an art piece usually take for you?
No, it varies. It varies. Sometimes the pieces happen really quickly, and it feels like someone else made them when that happens. You know, like just it's like within a week. Sometimes I can have pieces done. I guess, you know, scale might change that. There were some smaller pieces that I made several. Well, I guess it was the exhibition during the pandemic, and they were maybe like 15 inches by 22 inches. It's kind of small for me, and ink drawings. So the material matters. Like if it's a material that I can't go back into, then I have to work pretty quickly. Like if it's Conti crayon or ink, or not ink, if it's Conti crayon or graphite, then, you know, there's the opportunity to like kind of remove material and reintroduce it and like go back and forth. But with the ink, I don't really do that. Like it's, you know, once a mark is made, it's kind of there. And if it's not what I want, then again, I just start over. So like I could finish a piece in a day potentially. At other times pieces might take like 2 weeks or three. I mean, I guess there's some pieces that might even take like over a year. They just like sit there until I've sort of figured out, you know, there's something missing in those pieces. You know, either I don't have the right material, or I haven't figured out the technique, or there's something else going on. So I do have pieces that have been in my studio for quite a while that are unresolved until like something, you know, until I figure out whatever that missing element is and can complete it. So it a day to a year, I guess.
You might have mentioned this earlier, but do you ever mix materials for artwork?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I guess the most recent thing is layering. Well, I guess I approach it a couple ways. Lately, I've been drawing onto the paper with Conti crayon mostly, and then spraying ink on top of that, you know? And so there's, it creates these really like dark figures, and it combines that dry material with the wet, and it makes it immutable. Like I can't go back in and erase it. I kind of like that, and also transforms that drawing into something else. And it feels, I don't know, it feels like something between like a drawing and a painting and a print, maybe. I think, and I kind of enjoy that it's kind of unrecognizable.
Speaking of that, like dark figure. One of the series that I saw on your website was this kind of portraiture series with like a shadow figure. Could you talk about kind of the themes that you were exploring in that body of work?
Yeah. I think that might... Was that shadow piece from Indivisible, maybe? Was it the one with the eyes?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That was born... actually, it was from the distance I was feeling from the portraits, the photographs I'd taken. So Indivisible is a series of portraits of multiracial women I met in Portland and New Orleans, where I spent some time as an artist in residence at the Joe Mitchell Center. And I was taking quite a few photos and had met so many people. Like I'm kind of an introvert, so that takes a lot of energy. And, but it was just an exciting body of work to develop, you know, and I felt this sense of connection. I really wanted to, just pour all of my energy into it. And so after I was done with that body of work, or at some distance, you know, I don't quite remember how much time had passed, but in revisiting some of the portraits that I'd taken, the images I'd taken, I could sense that residue, you know, that sort of impression that the people I had photographed, that it had sort of evaporated, you know, like it just wasn't as like, I couldn't sense it as clearly, you know, that connection felt tenuous. And there was, I guess there was just a part of me that wanted to sort of capture that, you know, this inability to, truly like know anybody, you know, like there was just like such a deep like bond that I felt with some of the people who, you know, participated in that project, and to feel like I was so close to someone, and then like, you know, that sense having just kind of vanished, it was, you know, it was kind of alarming. And so that, those shadows were sort of in response to that. And also I think that I was also interested in this, you know, kind of idea of the shadow self, you know, this part of ourselves that we don't really commune with, you know, like that there are artifacts that sort of show up in our everyday lives that come from that space, you know, the sort of like unconscious space, but it's really hard to identify, you know. I think it's difficult to see that form, or even if we can, it's maybe hard to like reconcile. And so that kind of showed, I think it showed up in those shadow figure drawings.
It's really interesting. You mentioned your time at Joan Mitchell Center, which is a residency.
Mm-hmm.
And we briefly have talked about what residencies are in previous episodes, but why do you seek out residencies, or is that one by invitation?
It is not, but it's kind of limited to just Joan Mitchell recipients, and then also New Orleans recipients.
That's okay, don't worry. So just, I guess, how do residencies function for you? How do you seek them out? How do you know which ones are good opportunities and which ones aren't for you?
Right. Well, I don't do very many residencies. I chose to apply for the Joan Mitchell residency because I wanted to spend some time in New Orleans. I wanted to, and it was because of the Indivisible Project. I wanted to develop that work there and work with individuals, you know, from the New Orleans community. I'm really lucky in that I have a pretty fantastic studio, and I work full time as an artist, and so I don't often find a need to go on residencies. But lately, though, I have been thinking more about them, and I think that is because I'm eager to connect to other artists. You know, I think that is. That it's a really good reason to do it, you know, to get out of a space that feels comfortable, to forge connections, you know, to people outside of our immediate community, and I think to allow ourselves maybe to make work that we might not make, you know, in a space that we know. The Joan Mitchell Center is kind of a dream residency because you're in a city. They have this kind of fantastic compound where the residency or the studios are right on site. So, you know, you kind of roll out of bed, grab your coffee, and then go to work. And it's kind of amazing. But some residencies, you know, offer also distance from, you know, like the noise of a city. And I think that like sometimes that could be kind of nice too. So it, you know, I think it varies like the reason that artists would want to leave a comfortable space. But for me right now, I think residencies are appealing because I really like, I want to meet more artists, you know, I want to have more conversations, see like how our practices and interests maybe intersect or don't, and just build connections.
Have you had a chance to collab with any artists?
I I guess I don't do a lot of collaborations. I mean, I think that maybe the closest would be those portraits, you know, sitting down with other people in that conversation, like being vulnerable, you know, being open to making portraits that might surprise me, especially when like creating a likeness isn't my primary focus and it's really like the kind of the sort of impression that another person makes, you know, on me, like using that as a guide. So I think that's probably the closest to a collaboration I might ever get. Well, that's not true. I've been on a couple printmaking residencies, and at Crow Shadow, which is a residency out in Pendleton, Oregon, you're collaborating with the printmakers, you know. So where when I was there, I was drawing. Actually, that's when I started drawing on acetate. That's when Frank Jensen was the master printmaker at the time, and they didn't have any lithostones available for me. So, it's not an unusual thing to work with acetate, and so that's when I started experimenting with ink on, you know, an impermeable substrate, and using like a wet on wet technique to create marks. So yeah, I guess I've done a couple collaborations, kind of.
You referred to a lithostone, and we might just define what that means for the audience in case they don't know.
Yeah, it's limestone, isn't it? Is it limestone?
I think so. This is so embarrassing, but the printmaking studio I work out of doesn't have any lithography printmakers anymore, and so it's basically a weight that we use to tamp down the screen printing, the light table that we used to burn screens. Don't tell anyone. Anyway, lithography is a printmaking technique.
Yes. And you're working on a very like large stone, and I'm pretty sure it's limestone. I did a little bit of it in undergrad, and I think the part that I really loved about it was there's this like a large wheel that you use to sort of prep the surface of the stone, and it makes so much sense that I'm like process driven, but you kind of grind down the surface, and so, you know, you kind of do that for a while, and it makes this really soothing sound and like buzzing or humming kind of tension or, you know, friction. So that was kind of my favorite part of it, was grinding down the stones.
You mentioned that you like doing it in undergrad. So are you undergraduate in what?
I received my undergraduate degree in drawing at the University of South Carolina, and I went to grad school here at the Pacific Northwest College of Art.
Did you always want to be an artist when you were growing up, or like how did you first get into doing art?
I don't think I always wanted to be an artist. I don't think I knew I could be, you know. I think that I was always interested in it. I think I drew because it, you know, it made sense to me. It was what I used to like process the world, you know, and my emotions. And it turned out I was good at it. And I think it also, you know, it was a way for me to feel less like an outsider. I immigrated to the United States when I was close to 4, you know, and so it was challenging, I think, to assimilate. Like I feel like I spent a lot of time with my mother, and I don't know, my family was in the military, so we moved around quite a bit, and we lived in a few places that felt really isolated, which is strange. Like, I don't quite know where we were. I mean, I know, you know, like, we lived in Texas for a while, but I don't know why nothing was around us. It's very, you know, but I was also a child. So I spent a lot of time with my mother. You know, we both, like, we essentially learned English together. And when I finally did start school, you know, I felt like an outsider. So drawing was a way for me to feel more included. You know, I think other, like my peers, were more accepting of me, like when I drew something they couldn't, you know. And it's, you know, at the time I think it felt kind of like a superpower.
You also mentioned that you are a full-time artist. How did you make that happen?
It was a challenge. I think it was just like pure determination, really. Like I refused to find like a 9-to-5 job. I really didn't want to do that. I was also, there were these like really pivotal moments in my life where I was supported by my community in different ways. Like when I finished grad school, I received a Joan Mitchell MFA award, and that gave me a little more time, you know, to continue working in the studio exclusively. And I needed it. I needed to sort of find a balance after grad school. You know, graduate school, you're working at a pace that makes sense while you're in the program, but outside of it, it's totally unsustainable. Like I was like burnt out, I don't know, within like 6 months or something. But it just felt like there was this urgency and, you know, like I had to maintain that pace. I slowly kind of, you know, found some kind of balance that made sense and was fortunate enough to receive other grants and fellowships and sell artwork and making money in other ways, like licensing my artwork. That was something that I never even considered. As I've, you know, continued to do this, like there's just other opportunities that pop up. And I think that, you know, maintaining an active studio practice and, building connections can, like, keep you sort of prepared, I guess. Oh, it's interesting. While I was at the Joan Mitchell Center, there was a visiting artist there, and I think he was talking about how, I mean, a similar thing, you know, like how he built a life as an artist. And somebody said that he was lucky, and he quickly replied that luck takes hard work. And I, you know, was like, oh, wow, that is absolutely true. Like, you can't, like, if you're not prepared for an opportunity, you know, they'll just pass you by, you know. So I just thought that was just a way of thinking about luck that I'd never considered, you know. It's actually kind of dismissive of all the like hard work that we do put into it when you attribute it to just luck. I feel like I've been lucky, but I've also, you know, like worked much harder than I realize sometimes, you know, being an artist. I think that if I knew it was going to be difficult, this difficult, when I was young, I don't know if this is the path I would have chosen. Because there also have been a lot of, like, sacrifices in choosing to be an artist. But, again, though, I don't know. I feel like I've been committed to this before I even understood, you know, I wanted to be an artist. Like, this was something that was really innate. Like, so there's an answer in there somewhere.
Speaking of luck and jumping onto opportunities, I know a lot of us from PSU are curious how you kind of got the gig to work with Slater Kinney to do their album art and what was like.
It was an amazing experience. It was actually Harold Fletcher. He connected me to Carrie, and I met him because I worked with Lisa Jarrett and Harold run a program at KS MoCA King School in Northeast Portland, and where they invite artists to exhibit their work and maybe do like artist talks or hold workshops with the students. And so I did that and absolutely loved it. And I don't know how Harold knows Carrie, but he does. That's how that happened. And it was really phenomenal working with them. They were really open to my suggestions and kind of anything that I wanted to make. which is really rare. I was really, actually kind of surprised about the work that I made. It's in making that work, I was able to sort of explore ink on Duralar in a way that was outside of how I normally work. So, you know, not only did I get to make this amazing piece for them that they use for the cover, but also I got to expand my, you know, my practice and you know, develop this, this, you know, what felt like a new way of drawing, even though it's still built on, you know, this familiar process. But that's something that I think is just like a part of how I work. Like, it's really just about expanding something I already know and, you know, allowing these like familiar materials to surprise me and do something unexpected.
You said that they kind of let you just explore and create something. And I'm wondering, did you get to listen to the album beforehand and kind of let it inspire your work?
I did. Yes. Yeah. Which I don't normally do. I don't listen to music when I'm working in the studio. I find it kind of, it occupies the same part of my brain that I use to make work, you know, so it's kind of distracting. Like, I get caught up in the music and sort of the emotions that like arise from listening to that music, and then I can't channel that into my drawings. So I often just listen to audiobooks, but, you know, when I was making that piece for them, I just sat in the studio and like kind of listened to it over and over. When I was looking for images to use, I was listening to that music, you know, so I let it kind of, I let sort of the emotions that were, you know, arising from those songs sort of dictate, you know, the shape of the drawing, which is, again, not how I normally work.
It sounds like a lot of your experience developing work is coming from a much, like, from an internal place, mm-hmm. and sounds like maybe a somatic in some ways, like in your body place, but mm-hmm. and other, an intellectual place that's inside you. But I wonder if you have had inspiration from or mentorship from other artists that has informed your practice or your work.
I'm sure it has. I think that, you know, I can't think of anything right now, but I think that the kind of, I mean, I think it's similar to actually that process of the mechanisms at play when I'm taking photographs of individuals and like having conversation and sort of, you know, allowing myself to be vulnerable with people, right? And that, I think that there's, I think when you allow yourself to be in that state, there's kind of potential for anything, you know. There's, I think that that's when ideas or, you know, the sort of seed of something new is planted. And so maybe sometimes I don't even know where, you know, like ideas are coming from, but yeah, I'm sure, you know, that mentorships or like any kind of exchange with another person is going to like, you know, like create something new in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like more, so it sounds like it's more like you're having these kinds of like interpersonal energetic exchanges,
yes.
that feel like they spark for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that that's something that's become more apparent to me, like since, because of the, you know, like isolation that we all experienced, because there was a kind of, maybe calm isn't quite the right word, but there was something missing in the studio. And I think it's difficult for me anyway to, to create that momentum alone, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that might be part of the reason that I was going back into like my own archives and looking through images and trying to find a way to sort of reconnect to those photographs, you know, and to the individuals. And even though it didn't look the way it did when I first took the photos, or didn't feel the same, there's still something else that, you know, sparked. And so, yeah, I think, you know, I think probably all of us need that kind of exchange in our work.
Mm-hmm. What are you currently working on?
I am, I see the work that I'm currently working on as sort of an extension of my last body of work. I became really interested in Korean folklore and mythology, both Korean and also sort of Western, kind of taking all of these stories I'd, kind of absorbed, you know, since my youth, and thinking about how they've shaped me, you know, as an artist and as a woman. And I became kind of fascinated with the myths about women and serpents. And so I'm developing some work using, you know, that imagery, and pretty excited about it. They're, I feel this way about like all the work, I guess, all like every body of work that I'm developing, but it's just exciting. You know, it's they're very unexpected. They're dynamic. They're, you know, at times a little frightening. I still don't quite know where they're taking me, but I'm enjoying making them.
And how do you find opportunities to show your work? And, you know, how do you relate to curatorial practice?
I'm fortunate enough that I'm represented by a gallery here in Portland, Russo Lee Gallery. And so I have, like, solo shows pretty regularly. That part of my practice, my practice, I probably should spend more energy on. I do find it somewhat challenging. I think that part of me that had, you know, difficulty adjusting to living in the United States, you know, it doesn't really go away. Like it's kind of this sort of permanent resident in, you know, my body. So I think that making connections, you know, maintaining them is really important. But sometimes exhibitions don't feel as important to me as they should. You know, it's awful to say that, because I also want to share the work. You know, I don't feel like the work is entirely complete until it's out in the world, and, you know, I want to share it. But I think I want to make it more, and I want to spend time in the studio more. And so sometimes it's really difficult to balance that, you know, like I really just want to sometimes just be a hermit and not leave my studio, and I don't know, just make work and have someone else handle everything else, you know, that's a part of my practice. But I do have, you know, a few close friends that I trust, that I, you know, that I ask to, just to bring into my studio to see the work, to help me sort of navigate that part of my practice that just feels so, that feels more difficult than it should be, I guess. But yeah.
Ages ago, I think it was the second ever episode of the show, we had Ryan Pierce on, who also has shows work in Russo Lee still, right?
Yeah. Well, sometimes.
And other places and whatnot. But yeah, it's interesting to hear just all the ways that every artist that comes through relates to each of these things. So it's like, I'm like, I don't know, there's no shoulds in here, but I mean, however you like to share your work. But maybe a better question is, like, do you have an imagined audience for your work? And if so, who's that?
Well, you know, someone recently asked me this question, and I think in the past, maybe, you know, like I don't know, maybe like during grad school and immediately after, I was thinking about, you know, audiences that visit galleries and museums and like that work, the work that I produce being for them. But since working on that public art project and making work that's more closely or that brings me closer to like, you know, my culture and my past and my family, I'm thinking more about them, you know, I'm thinking about like the young version of me that didn't really have access to art. We didn't have the means or the time to visit galleries and museums. I didn't even know they existed. Like I said, we traveled around quite a bit when I was young because we were in the military, and then we settled in South Carolina. And I mean, it seems like most of what I know about art I learned from television. And so, I think the artist I am now is making work for people like my family, you know, individuals who may not visit galleries and museums because they don't feel accessible. You know, they feel like spaces that don't belong to them. And, you know, so I want to make work that is relatable, you know, on multiple levels. And so I often share my work with my mom because I'm curious, you know, to know how she feels about it, because it's a way for us to, you know, connect on like a different, you know, in a different aspect, I guess, not as just like mother daughter, but, you know, to sort of invite her into my creative practice and in this part of my life. But to also know that like I'm successful, you know, that attempt to make work that can speak to someone who doesn't feel like art is meant for them, you know, or that you have to have like this education to be able to interpret it. I'm just moving more away from making work that feels sort of a little too veiled, maybe.
Great. So it was great to hear about how you're so like passionate about your practice. But I'm curious if you ever really experience art block.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pretty. Well, I mean, I don't know if it's regular, but, you know, I think that maybe feeling those moments where things feel out of balance in the studio, and maybe also when the events, you know, the world around us feel like they're building, there's, you know, it becomes like too charged and too difficult to process, you know, the emotions that are arising because of everything. Mm-hmm. Then it, you know, it definitely has an impact for me in my studio. And during those times when it feels kind of agonizing to make work, I find myself in the garden, you know, planting things and moving things, I think just to create, or just to feel some kind of calm, let sort of that, you know, anxiety kind of ease out of my body so I can get back into the studio. But yeah, I think that when that happens, like, it really, it's just, there's, I don't know if it should hurt so much to make work. And, or at least I've learned that I don't want it to. And so I find other things to do. And gardening lately has been the thing that is, I don't know, it's brought some kind of solace, I guess.
We've got maybe 5 or 10 minutes of record time left, so just want to give a little flag for that at this moment.
That's not a good final question, but this is just a curious question. What exactly do you garden?
Oh, well, mostly native, you know, plants. I am trying to be considerate of my water usage, and And so, like, you know, right now, like, the hellebores and daffodils are coming up, and I'm pretty excited about that. I the last couple years, I've planted quite a few manzanitas. I think they're beautiful. They're so beautiful. So I have kind of a collection of those going on in my front and backyard. So they might be my favorites. Yeah.
I think that's a fine final question. I mean, I very relate to a lot of the things you're saying about the sort of going back to your body when you're having a writer, a creative block. It's like, for me, gardening, mm-hmm. running, like, those are, you know, like, moving the body, returning to the body is so interesting. And yes. I don't know, I think it's nice to talk about while we garden.
Yeah.
Did you have any questions you wanted to ask the students?
Oh, goodness. I guess, I don't know if we have time for this, but I'm kind of curious what your art practices look like. Do we have time?
Yeah,
for just
let's,
a short?
Okay. We'll have time.
I am mostly a writer, so my art comes out in my writing, and I'm in literally every type of writing project event that you can think of at the school.
I'm going to school for graphic design, but that was kind of my segue into just kind of getting into the art world. I do find myself leaning more towards the illustrative side, physical art making. I'm getting into a lot of like color pencil and pastel drawings recently.
And I'm a theater arts major at Portland State, so I devote a lot of time to that. I'm primarily an actor, but I'm getting a little bit more into technical design, and I'm also starting to kind of explore like textile arts and costume design. Sewing is really hard, so the gap between the skill I have versus the things that I want to make is very wide, but with persistence, I think I'll be able to start. Mm-hmm. Making the things in my mind happen in the fabric.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Is there anything that you wanted to promote, or do you have upcoming openings?
I will be in a group exhibition in June at Russo Lee Gallery with 5 other artists. I'm pretty excited about that. And I think I'll also have work in an upcoming exhibition at the Portland Art Museum that's featuring Black Oregon artists.
Great.
So yeah, I have a couple things happening this year I'm Excellent. Pretty excited about.
Sounds exciting. And maybe we can grab some links to those things and post them on the show page?
Sure, yes.
And then how does somebody find out more about your work, your website, or do you
yes.
use social media?
I do, yeah. It's just my name, SamanthaWall.com, and also Samantha Wall on Instagram.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for being our guest. It was really nice to hear about your practice and learn about your work.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you. This has been really fun.
Yeah,
great
thanks for meeting
you.
This has been Art Talk Bus Stop, the monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. Our show airs the 4th Wednesday of every month. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7